Kia ora koutou, no mai, haere mai, ki Kickarts, Auckland's comprehensive art show, brought to you every Sunday night here at Planet Audio, Planet FM, Planet FM, planetaudio.org.nz, or live stream 104.6. I'm Richard Green, slightly confused on this Sunday night about who I am and where I am, but obviously I'm in the right place because it's Kickarts time every Sunday here at 8. Matariki, kia koutou. It is Matariki at the moment, and the Matariki Festival is running. Have you been to any of the events? Georgia, who's desperately looking up some music, I asked her to look. She said, you're multitasking. That's quite clever, really.
I'm trying to.
That's why you're the best.
The music.
That's why you're the best co-host ever.
Thanks.
Oh, no. Oh, wow. There you go.
I'm going to something on Friday.
Are you? What's that?
I don't know, right. But it's at Point Trev.
Oh, wow.
On Friday, and my mum was talking about it, and I was like, I should spend some time with my mum. I'm
going to go. It could be your show, Jenny.
No, it's not my show, but I do know what it is.
Oh, okay.
What is it?
Is it at the RSA?
Yes.
Yes, and it is going to be fantastic. It's
She said Annie Crummer was
there. Yes, Annie Crummer and Maisie Rika. And it's part of the Matariki on the Move program.
Oh, right.
And it's free. And it's going to be beautiful.
And you can get some roast potatoes and peas and
chicken. I love
chicken.
The RSA.
Yeah, it's a great
just
place.
Just in general. Any RSA. Love it.
And you get to hang out with your mum at the Razza.
Be great.
Eating a roast, listening to Annie Crummer. I can't think of a better Friday night.
Yeah, you should come.
I'll be in Rotorua.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. But I'm sure there's a RSA in Rotorua. Is there, do you think? I hope so.
I don't know.
Yeah, we'll find that out. Google. So, Jenny, yes, welcome.
Hi, kia ora. Thank you.
And you're doing a play as part of the Matariki Festival.
Yes, I am. I'm doing a kids' show. So I am helping some parents provide their kids with a little bit of entertainment for about an hour in the school holidays. And my show...
Parents a bit of space, is that... Bit of time? Or the parents can come along too?
Of course they can, yeah. But just an activity for the kids. And it's free, which is the most important thing about it.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's on at Lopdale House Theatre in Titirangi.
I love Lopdale House. It's such a great venue.
It's been totally refurbished in the last couple of years. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Even with the refurbishment. It's just a great space.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who run it are awesome. Sorry to interject.
That's your job, is to interject with interesting and witty banter. And so far, you're on about 9. I'm quite impressed.
What, 9 out of 100?
Out of 10. No, witty banter, yes. Yes. Titirangi, I haven't been to Lopdale since it was refurbished, actually.
It's interesting. Is it really different?
Gallery up the top on the roof, is that right?
Yeah, but the theatre, they've totally changed the space. Like, it faces the other way, it doesn't have the same carpet.
Oh, well, that's probably... actually, I have to say that the Titirangi Theatre did remind me a little bit of a bordello.
What's a bordello?
Look it up on Google. I'm not explaining it before 8:30. But the carpets were all deep red and, you know, the chairs were all red leather.
Oh,
and
still red.
Yeah.
But the chairs were actually just like school hall chairs before. Now they're proper chairs, theatre chairs that fold.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, comfortable.
Flash.
Comfortable, yeah.
It's an Auckland Council venue, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Wow.
Yeah. And there's lots to do there as well. There's a little, like you said, there's a gallery upstairs. There's a beautiful cafe called Deco, which is really just won best hot chocolate.
Their hot chocolate is so good.
Yeah.
Okay, I love going out for breakfast. Deco has my number one favourite breakfast. You know, before when Richard said I don't really talk during the show, I've talked more during the show than probably any other show this year.
You've actually talked more in the show than you have in the last three. And you were hosting one of them. So that was quite interesting. Okay. Hot chocolate, one of my faves. I tell you, I could do with one now. It's actually quite cold outside.
They put a big Whitaker's, like they put like the bar in it.
Right. I was actually just saying, I was going to have it. There were biscuits in the jar here at Planet FM, chocolate biscuits. And I was just saying, I'm going to save myself with a Whitaker's salted caramel dark chocolate, which has just come out. Highly recommend it. Highly recommend it. It's taken a long time to come out, in the same way it took a long time for women to get the vote as well, I have to say. 125 years ago, in fact, women in this country, first in the world, got the vote. And Auckland Museum is celebrating that, War Memorial Museum is celebrating that by an exhibition called 125 Years of Women's Suffrage.
No, kia ora everyone.
Kia ora, welcome Nina. Nina's the curator, by the way.
Yes, one of the curators at Auckland Museum and one of the curators on this show. So the exhibition's called Are We There Yet? Women and Equality in Aotearoa. So, and it's using, yeah, looking at 125 years ago and what happened, but really using that as kind of a launch pad, I guess, to look at the intervening 125 years and how far we've come, how far we've got to go.
Yeah. And I saw when I went to the Butterfly exhibition opening, which you've still got to get along to see that. Butterflies are free. I saw the big writing on the wall and went, I've got to go and see. I mean, it must be a fascinating subject to research because it's not just about the suffrage, it's all the things that went around
that. Absolutely. Yeah? A massive topic to research. And when we started it, I sort of thought, God, have we bitten off too much? Then we can chew. You know, it's a massive subject, 125 years, it's huge. But yeah, it's been amazing. So the show is using primarily Auckland Museum's documentary heritage collections. So that's our photography collections, manuscript collections, so things like letters and diaries, that kind of stuff, and protest material as well as our published collections, so showcasing things like Broadsheet, the amazing feminist publication, which ran for 25 years, groundbreaking, incredible publication. So we're pretty stoked.
Was it true that most of the suffragette women were teetotalers? I heard a rumour.
Well, the Women's Christian Temperance Union was a really key organising body, I guess. But I was just talking to someone the other day on Friday, an academic who was in the show, and she was talking about wanting to broaden that idea of who was a suffragist. And yes, they were often teetotalers, and but not always.
No.
So there's a wonderful woman in our show. She died before the vote came through, but her name was Polly Plum. That was her nom de plume. She wrote to the newspapers.
Polly Plum.
Polly Plum was her name. Her real name was Mary Coakley. And she agitated... Well, her real bugbear was about marriage and a woman's rights being subsumed upon entering that union and financial independence and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, the teetotaling was one side of it, but there were other sides as well. And, of course, there were the Māori suffragists as well who were agitating for different things. So, yeah.
I understand that Māori women got the vote first because of the land court and the allocation of land.
Well, yeah, that's a complicated story,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah.
And one of the women we've showcased or highlighted in this show, and we've got to work with her whānau, which has just been the most amazing experience, is a woman called Meri Tatai Mangakahia. And so she was the first woman in New Zealand to ever speak in any parliament. So she spoke in the Kotahitanga Parliament in 1893, and she was advocating not just for the vote, Māori women didn't have it at that point, but for women to be able to stand in parliament and to be able to choose their own representatives. So it went beyond the Pākehā suffragists to advocate for women actually standing in parliament. So it's wonderful being able to kind of shine a light on all of these.
Because I reckon it's a part of our history that a lot of people aren't really aware of. We know that, you know, Kate Shepherd on the something dollar bill.
And exactly. And there's many, many other people.
Five? Is she on the $5
bill?
Ten. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Sorry.
Yeah. And, of course, we look at other women, you know, not just of 1893, but all the way through. So there's a cacophony of wonderful women.
Ongoing struggle.
Ongoing struggle. Exactly.
I just read an article last week that said that still in New Zealand within the legal profession, women earn almost half of what men do for the same job still in 2018.
Mm.
But then obviously it's come out the legal profession's under a bit of pressure to try and sort some serious stuff out.
Absolutely. And we had some wonderful, on the opening night, we were lucky enough to have Helen Clark open the exhibition, which was really amazing, and Penny Hulse as well from the council. And they both talked about, how far we've come, but how far we've got to go, and those kind of things around boards and employment and...
Absolutely.
Yeah, and equal pay.
And it's quite amazing that this exhibition opens in the year where the Prime Minister of the country is a 37-year-old woman who just gave birth to a baby.
Amazing.
Yeah, in office, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the other things, it just kind of ties into that we have in the show, we showcase trolling. So historic trolling and contemporary trolling, because it's been around forever, it's just the format's changed. And one of the things we talk about is
some things that Muldoon said during his tenure, and one was around...
He was a great prime minister, yeah. Wasn't he?
One was around women being the breadwinner, and I just sort of think, looking at that, isn't that amazing? Now we have Jacinda in this role, new mother. So we have come a long way, but
he'll be rolling in his grave, won't he?
I know.
He'll be going, what the hell? Yeah. A shocker for him.
Yeah.
Yes. Timpani. Hey? Hello? Does anyone know what a timpani is? Anyone? Anyone? Before Steve?
I know what a timpani is.
You know what a timpani is?
Yeah. Only because I've worked in a school where there's an orchestra, otherwise I wouldn't have any clue.
No, I only just learned.
So, yeah, welcome, Steve.
Well, thank you.
A timpanist,
yes.
A percussionist, musician from the Auckland Philharmonic Orchestra.
Yeah, you know, it's funny on that note.
It's a music joke. Well,
you know, it's funny. Like when I go out, you know, and meet people in public, it's always a really funny conversation trying to explain exactly what I do, because you know, people will say like, oh, you know, so what do you do for a living? And I, you know, say I'm a musician, and of course everyone thinks that means I play in a rock band, right?
So
you know, of course it's like, oh my god, you know, do you have a band? And so I always say, yeah, I actually play in an 18th century cover band, you know. You know, sometimes we play some 19th century stuff, even sometimes some 20th century, but you know, we're a cover band. And and then it's funnier because then of course they're like, oh well, you know, what instrument do you play? And I'm like, I know if I say timpanist, you know, it's just gonna deer in headlights. So I just say I'm a drummer.
Oh,
you know,
that's cool.
And if they're like, oh, that's cool, then I say like, yeah, actually, you know, I also play percussion. And if, you know, if they're still with me at that point, then I'll say like, oh, you know, actually, I mostly play timpani, like the giant drums in the back of the orchestra. And then they're like, oh yeah,
you're that guy,
right? Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just going to give myself another drink.
Exactly. Yeah. I need to go hang out with my friends anywhere else.
But aren't drummers the coolest? Yeah. I mean, the drummers are the cool person in a band, really.
See, that's what I tell myself every day.
I saw a matrix of musicians, and you know, there's all these lead singers, and there's all these bass players, and these lead guitar players, and there's very few drummers.
Hmm.
But they get most of the work because they're, you know, most people go for the cool instruments. Hang on. It sounded better in my head. Most people go for the more popular instruments.
Sure.
And I'm sure, why timpani? What made you choose timpani?
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, when I say mostly playing timpani, that is my position at the Auckland Philharmonia. But in reality, it's actually a very small part of everything I do. So, you know, when I, what's funny is when I first started playing, I actually started on trumpet because my dad had a trumpet. And it seemed cool, and I wanted to play it. And then I started playing in band, and then I saw how cool I thought the drummers looked. And I was like, no, that's going to be me. So anyway, I switched to that. And when we're in university, we have to study everything when you're a percussionist. And I mean, like, everything from, like, mallet instruments, snare drum, drum set, Latin percussion, hand drums, and, of course, timpani is a part of that. And when you get to the stage that you are, you know, considering what you're going to do after school, obviously, symphony orchestra is a you know, one of the most solid job opportunities. So, and when you get to that level, you, like at the APO, we have it's actually separate. We have a principal timpanist. And then separate from that is we have a percussion section. So we have a principal percussionist and then two additional percussionists. And so I do it all. It's just that at the APO, my job is the principal timpanist. So there I am primarily playing timpani, which is fun because, you know, it's going to work is basically stress relief because I just hit stuff as loud as I can, right?
You know,
I mean,
what a great job.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
What do you do to relax then?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Go. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that is the cool part, is that really it's like, yeah, actually, no, that's a good question. Now I'm thinking about it. It's funny because, you know, I had like an hour break before I came here. And today was kind of a crazy day, so the way that I, like, relaxed and chilled out is I just went into my room, made sure that none of my flatmates were home, and just played some guitar and sang along. And
nice.
Yeah, yeah.
So are you in
music?
Are you in another band? Do you play in another band? Or have you got time?
Yeah. So I do quite a few other things actually. In addition to playing at the APO, I also I have a band. And
Did the finger.
Yeah.
Finger quote.
Yeah, I realize this is radio, so I just did the bunny ears.
I have
ears
to describe
fingers.
Everything.
Yeah, and the reason I do the bunny ears is
you did it again.
Right, I just did it again. So I got kind of creative recently, and I've always been really into like film editing, and I've worked on. I used to live in L.A. and worked on some web series then, and got really into film editing, and I recently made a couple of videos where. In particular, there's one where there's a xylophone solo that is accompanied by four marimba players. And so what I did is I actually videoed myself playing all five parts and then spliced it together. But not like, you know, like normally you'll see like four panels in a video. I actually like edited it so that it actually looks like one frame and there's just five of me standing there. Just like, you know, like... The Parent Trap Lindsay Lohan style, where you know you see both of them and it just looks like both of them there, and you know so I did that, and I had way too much fun doing that, and through percussion and singing guitar, I play a lot of instruments, so I'm in my spare time working on a solo album with my band in Bunny Ears again. This band is called Steve Logan and His Imaginary Friends Band, because it's me playing all the parts.
Right.
And so when it comes time to make music videos, I'm going to shoot it the same way, where it just literally looks like it's, you know, five of me standing there.
We'll find you some friends, Steve. We'll form a proper band for you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Sounds like a really good concept. And that's got a kind of a niche feel about it too, isn't it?
Where
people go, oh, there's Steve and his Steve's.
Yeah,
have different hats and stuff. Or
actually, people really made fun of me for this, but I had to. I brought like five outfits to where I was doing it. Just hung them up on a gong rack, and I just set the camera up, filmed one, ran off, changed clothes, walked back on, filmed the next one, changed clothes, walked back on. You know.
Is this on YouTube? Can we see this?
And it's on my Facebook page as well. It's cool. Yeah, it's a fun time.
We should actually maybe post the video on Kick Arts. We'll put a link on tomorrow when we post the show.
Yeah, please.
So
that'd
people
be great.
Can, sounds fascinating. Yeah. Love it.
I had a good time doing it.
We could do that too. We could just be all the guests.
Ooh.
We could interview ourselves about stuff. That would be quite fascinating.
That would be fascinating.
Well, actually, it would last fascinating for 5 minutes. Yes. So, writing a play for children, what inspired you to do that?
Well, I'm a teacher, secondary teacher of drama, and I found myself in a position last year where I was charged with organising the school production.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, and which happens to drama teachers, and this is something that I've come across quite a bit in my teaching career, is trying to find a script that, or trying to stuff a whole lot of students into a script and put on a show. Mm. And it often is inappropriate, maybe inappropriate themes, not appropriate age group, that sort of thing. So a group of Year 13 girls and I got together and decided to write something ourselves that fits with our school core values and something that we're happy to show our school community and the parents. And it happened to fall in June, so we thought, well, what a great way to celebrate Matariki with our school community. Because I think for me, Matariki is about giving thanks and sharing our gifts that we have to offer, and performing is such a great way to do that, and getting the whole community together and to celebrate is awesome. So anyway, long story short, we didn't have a lot of time, and we just went searching for Matariki myths, and I found there are a lot of myths based around the Seven Sisters star constellation, and I found a really simple one that was about Matariki the mother and her six daughters coming together with their kuia, Papatuanuku, to help prepare the earth for the new year. And so we based it around that, and we made the sisters into characters, and of course they all have their secrets and their dreams and their relationships, and so it just turned into a story of the sisters and a whānau coming home back to their roots and really having their eyes opened to their own gifts and what it is that they have to offer. And it actually deals with grief as well, because the grandmother, Kuia character, passes away. And I talked to the students about that, and I said, is that something that, do we want to go there? And they sort of said, well, they really appreciate the way that through theatre and through the arts, we can go there with those kind of issues, especially even for children. We can meet things like grief head on, and a lot of the characters have decisions to make, and I think it's a really great way to engage young people in those kind of themes, but through a really accessible vehicle, I suppose,
and safe
lights and safe and costumes, and we also weave some of the Māori creation characters or goddesses into the story as a kind of a framework to remind the children and the audience that whatever decision we have and whatever journey we have, we're never the first one to take that, and that our ancestors have always, they did it first, and that they come with us when we have to go on those particular, when we have to face those kind of issues in our lives. So that's kind of where it came from. It was a devised work, I suppose, and it's grown into this for the Matariki Festival as more of a public show for more geared. I've tweaked it so that it's more geared up for children, for a younger audience, and it's got a few more jokes and a few more colourful costumes and things like that. But yeah, it's just, for me, it's like a modern fairy tale for this generation of kids coming through. My kids don't learn Red Riding Hood and, you know, all those kind of fairy tales that we grew up on. Our kids, they're more like, it's a New Zealand stories, and the Māori myths are helping them to learn things that are more relevant to them, I think. So that's kind of what I wanted to do.
And also, I mean, just about those fairy tales, eh? I mean, that's one of the reasons for suffragette. Get rid of some of those fairy tales which actually subjugated women. And a lot of those stories, and made them the relying on the
stereotypes,
handsome prince and the wood chopper to come and rescue them because they couldn't do it themselves.
Yeah, that's one thing I guess in the show that we really want to get across, is that there's no, a woman's history isn't homogenous, and there's no one thread through that history. It's a multi-layered tapestry, if you will. And that's something we really wanted to really push, I suppose, and the different struggles that women have advocated for over the years, and that sometimes they're contradictory and they butt up against each other, and there are tensions within it, within feminism, to this day. And yeah, that's something we wanted to talk about, and we wanted to be that forum, I suppose, as a modern 21st century museum. We're not just a kind of passive place where people come to just look and not engage. We want to engage with our visitors, I suppose.
Museums have changed in that way, haven't they?
They have, yeah. And one thing I'm really proud about in the show is that we actually put the museum in the narrative, which doesn't often happen. I think often we are seen as kind of this blank slate in which kind of public history happens within, but we are a part of that history as well. So there are a couple of places in the show, for example, the trolling section. We got trolled when we went to collect. We asked the public for material from the Women's March in 2017. We went on to Facebook and asked for protest material, and we got trolled because of our involvement in political issues. People didn't think that we should be doing that.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Which is really interesting, because it also tells you what some people think our role is. It might be that they just think we should be a war memorial museum, that we're not kind of involved in other social issues.
Which is a political issue.
Yes, exactly. Thank you.
It's one of the big political issues.
Absolutely.
The war.
It seems just the oddest thing to me. But it was also really interesting, and it is now a part of the show. So
great.
Yeah, I think that's really cool.
People troll because they feel threatened that they might
lose
something,
yeah.
Which is really interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
You putting on this exhibition obviously is going to subjugate a whole lot of, emasculate a whole lot of men around
Auckland,
I reckon. Yeah, I'm sure it was. I'm a late adopter to online television watching because I don't actually have time to watch television, but I've gone all out and I've got Lightbox and Netflix. I just went, I got the whole gamut because there were things I want to watch. I just started watching The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh my lord.
I highly recommend it. As a book, it was brilliant.
Brilliant.
The series is so good.
Are you on to the
good.
Second season?
No.
I've had to stop. It's too intense.
Yeah, I have a treadmill set up in my office and I walk and watch it. I've got the TV set up on my I've got a standing desk and I can walk for 2 hours and watch and just binge watch television. It's fantastic because I don't feel so bad about sitting on the couch because I'm actually, you know, burning quite a lot of
absolutely.
Walking quite fast, but it's the only way I'll watch I don't like sitting for large periods of time. This is probably the longest I sit in a week, but getting the opportunity to watch, there's a lot of television that's coming out that's challenging. You talk about political issues, they're actually challenging those political issues rather than just being passive kind of television that's, you know, banal situation comedies, of which still exist on Netflix and Notebox, I have to point out. There's some really good challenging ones,
absolutely,
isn't there?
Absolutely.
Are you television watchers at all?
I am a big television watcher.
Netflix?
Yeah. The Letdown on Netflix is, just like you say, it's really interesting, really challenging in terms of, really it goes for the stay-at-home mum type stereotype. It's really interesting.
Wow. Mm.
There's that great one at the moment called Nanette. Have you watched that?
Oh,
it's a comedy. Stand up comedy. Wow. It is really amazing. A comedian called, I can't remember her name.
Georgia will look it up. But it was. But it was mentioned. I was at a meeting at the with the comedy festival, some people from the comedy festival, and they mentioned that as a show to watch.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And absolutely, amazing.
The premise.
She's a stand-up comedian. She's Australian lesbian.
Hannah Gadsby.
That's her name. And she at the beginning she kind of lays out that she's giving up on comedy, and she kind of talks about comedy or stand-up comedy having two points, I guess, a beginning and a middle, and she talks about the fact that it doesn't have an end, and so she's gone through this trauma in her life. You'll have to watch it to find, you know, to get to grips with it, but that it hasn't given her the opportunity to kind of heal and to come to grips with parts of her life that are really traumatic, and she basically uses that Netflix special to just do that.
Wow.
And it stops being a comedy very, very quickly, and it is really, really powerful.
So do you think, this is going off on a tangent, but that's what we do here at Kick-Arts. So partly we're talking about politics and the museum shouldn't be doing that sort of thing because it should be just a war memorial museum.
Mm.
Is there a place for politics and art? Art and politics? Politics and art? either way?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Politics are art. Art is politics.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's interesting. Actually, this is really good to know that you guys are getting trolled because actually at the APO we're doing a concert that is titled A Woman's Place.
Yeah,
later this
you've
year.
Been working with us actually.
Yes,
the museum.
Yes. Which,
old friends.
Yeah,
how
about that? which I'm really excited about. And you know, it's as you can probably tell from listening to me talk for this long, I'm American.
Sorry, I thought you were Canadian.
So anyway, it's interesting being here now, especially what's happening with Jacinda Ardern and all this. I should probably put the front end disclaimer on this right now that I do not support the person that's running America right now. it's a really amazing time to be here, and you know we're on top of, you know, I'm going to be a part of this concert where we're celebrating women's suffrage. Yeah, Jacinda Ardern is doing what she's doing right now. You know, in America, we're like running back towards the dark ages right now. So
Watching The Handmaid's Tale, I was going, this is where it could be. It just seems like there's, you know, signs of fascism.
Right.
Mm. Early signs of fascism creep in.
Yeah.
And I was watching it going, oh my God. You know, and there was a line in the episode I watched today that said something along the lines of, it just slowly creeps past you and you just don't notice because it's really slow. Mm. It's a slow creep.
It's
and then suddenly
tough.
you've lost your rights and they're building a wall and Mexico's paying for it.
And putting kids in cages. So.
Yeah.
Well, they're doing that in Australia as well, though.
That's
so,
true.
You know,
New
it's
Zealand
not
boy.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. not just America.
No,
it seems like a worldwide problem. So here we go on all sorts of views on here in Kick-Arts. So... any comments on that, Jenny? politics, art? Because is your show political? Does it just?
Oh, is it political? It's an all-female show. Is that political? That wasn't sort of.
Don't tell the Globe Theatre.
Oh, apparently women don't sell tickets.
What?
Well, I heard that.
They should be.
I heard that was a quote that from the pop-up Globe that women don't sell tickets.
Goodness gracious.
But I do hope that lots of people went along and saw the all-female Julius Caesar. I think that proved completely wrong.
Yeah, it was. I went to the basement the other day. There was a woman selling tickets. I understand what they're talking about. Got no idea what they're talking about. No idea.
Nice.
That's true. And we often have dancers, female dancers, actors, musicians in here, and they say the same thing. They still struggle in an industry where it's still predominantly dominated by men. Mm. So you're changing that. So what school, can I ask what school that you teach at?
Yes, Marist College.
In Mount Albert?
In Mount Albert.
So that's an all-girls school?
It is an all-girls school, and it's also a Catholic school. And to be honest, a lot of politics goes with that. Mm. And I found as a teacher that it is quite difficult finding scripts or finding literature or anything that is really going to fit within those expectations and requirements and... Anything can be controversial, really, can it?
I confess I directed two shows for Auckland Girls Grammar School a couple of years back, and I wrote one of them for their 120th anniversary, I think it was. And then I looked for another one that could be done, and it was really hard to find a good, strong female, apart from nonsense.
Unless you wanted to do an all-female Shakespeare, which is always there, but...
it had to be a musical, you see.
Right.
So that sort of confined that. So we ended up doing, oh gosh, I can't remember what we ended up doing. Set in the 50s, musical.
Grease.
No, no, that one.
West Side Story.
Hairspray.
West Side Story.
No, not at that. It's about a singer in a band. And so we got boys from Mount Albert Grammar who came over to play the male leads because I hate seeing...
Girls with moustaches.
You know?
I'm exactly the same. Yeah. And they hate... I played all of those parts when I was at school.
Right.
And they hate it. Yeah. And it's not... They can't be authentic. And like you say, you have to write it. If you want to do it right, you have to write it.
And which is what you've done.
Yeah.
So this is coming out of the school environment.
Yes.
And the students have come with you to do it?
A few of the students have come with me, and a few of my past students that I've had at Marist. It's kind of like a Marist reunion, which is really cool. But I'm really enjoying having some adults in the room as well.
Right.
Which is cool. But, so the reason that this happened in the first place is because I applied for some funding from Creative Communities Scheme, which is a collaboration between Creative New Zealand and the Auckland Council. And I actually just... I can't speak highly enough of the whole process. It's, if you want to write a show and you want to put it on in public, you just have to fill out the forms. The money is there. The funding is there. It's awesome. And it's a big process. It's like an 18-page form, but it's very well set out. I really think that, especially for young people these days who want to get involved in the arts, and they all say there's no parts and there's no work. You really, if you're committed to it, you can make your own work and you can get funding if you want to.
And that's what a lot of performers coming out of institutions are doing, because they realise that they can't sit around on the phone, although that you don't sit around the phone anymore. You take it with you, don't you?
But just waiting for that call up.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I read some stats a couple of years back that said that actors in Auckland will hit 1 in 60 auditions for a part, because there are so many actors out there. Is it the same musicians? I mean, is that why you've gone down the safe route of the...
I think probably a good way to point to it is just that I moved from America for a job, you know what I mean? For music jobs are insane. I mean, absolutely insane. I think for Principal Timpani, there's maybe 3 auditions a year.
Around the world?
The world, yeah.
Oh, my God. What, What were you thinking?
I know. I know. I mean, yeah, it's really.
With himself.
It's insane. Because, you know, if you think about it, like for my job, there's one in each city, you know, and if you know, you want to play till, or if you can keep playing until you're 65, you keep playing until you're 65. And so, yeah, the opportunities are very slow. The audition process is insane.
Is it quite physically taxing to play
symphony? Oh, certainly. Yeah,
Are we going to be playing it when we're 65? Well?
Well, that's the thing is, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's something I've, you know, that I think about a lot. It's like, yeah, there certainly will be a point where the, you know, especially like the finer motor movements will probably escape me. And
they escape me now.
Yeah, yeah. But actually, yeah, you know, it's interesting because we have a program coming up that I'm really excited about though, because it's gonna let me play a few different things. Because we're doing, I don't know if any of y'all are familiar with the Gruffalo or the Gruffalo's Child.
Yes. That's what you're here to talk about.
And that's how you pivot. So yeah, I mean. You know, because it's cool because what we're doing is, speaking of live performance, you know, we're taking the films, both the Gruffalo and the Gruffalo's Child, and we'll have the orchestra sitting on the stage, and then a screen above our heads. Well, hopefully not like directly above my head because it makes me nervous, but it happens anyway. So
health and safety, be covered off. Don't worry.
I know, but they're gonna show the film up there and with. The live orchestra playing the score underneath. And I mean, like the film, you know, it's like James Corden and Helena Bonham Carter and Robbie Coltrane and,
I don't know what that is. It's a movie, right?
That's okay. That's okay. Yeah.
First a book.
Yeah, The Gruffalo. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beautiful book.
A famous book.
Yeah. And then The Gruffalo's Child came after, which is not as good as The Gruffalo.
Gruffalo's Child always comes after, though, eh?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know how it is.
No, it's not it.
No.
It's
okay.
But it was a film.
Right, because so Julia Donaldson was the author, there were award-winning books that were eventually turned into these. I mean, basically the concept of the Gruffalo is that you have this mouse, which is voiced by James Corden, and he's going on a mission to find some nuts in the forest, and he runs into predators that are ready to eat him, and so in order to escape, he comes up with this concept of this like terrifying monster. Well, you know, naturally as things go, this terrifying monster turns out to be true, or like a real creature.
No spoilers, though.
Sorry. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert, everybody. That this monster is the Gruffalo. And anyway, so then of course the Gruffalo starts chasing the mouse too, and it's hilarious and it's awesome, and it'll be fun to do live because of course like having the live orchestra element, especially like bringing kids along. It's just like there's so much to watch, you know, like if you get bored with what's happening on the screen, you just look down and you know, you see string players frantically trying to play that many notes.
Is it like Peter and the Wolf?
So
an instrument represents a character.
There's a lot of that goes on, yeah, for sure, and there's a lot of cool sound effects that you know we make, which is really fun to watch. And you know, it's something we do quite regularly now, this like live orchestra, like we did Harry Potter, the first Harry Potter film last year, Indiana Jones, Titanic.
It's a way of engaging people with live orchestra, because I think there's that perception that going to the symphony orchestra, the Philharmonia, is a posh thing. It is exclusive.
Mm. Yeah.
You have to wear your twin set and pearls and your fur. Right.
Did you guys play for Michael Bolton?
Yeah, I was.
Wow. So sorry
incredible.
For you.
Oh.
Yeah. It was awesome.
Was that incredible?
Yeah, it was great.
Wow.
Yeah.
Michael Bolton, I'm not a fan.
I mean, I'm not either, but he's still have long hair. Amazing.
Can we put
it? No, it's quite short now. Fortunately, he left the long hair in the 80s. So.
Okay.
Fortunately. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, speaking of the 80s, too, I'm going to mention, do you know the name Gary Brain?
I don't think so.
So this is somebody that you should probably know about.
Oh.
Gary Brain was, and I only remember when you're talking about how old are you going to be when you're playing the timpani.
Yeah.
Gary Brain was a principal timpanist for the New Zealand Symphony Orchestra for 20 years.
Oh,
and he was 46 when he was injured in a bag fell out of an overhead locker on a flight and smashed his wrist.
Wow.
So he couldn't play anymore. Because he was quite important in timpani, I imagine.
Yeah.
But he became a conductor until his death in 2015. He was 79. But he was 46 when he was still playing the timpani. Yep. And I remember him as an intermediate school student. Not him as an intermediate school student. I was the intermediate school student, but I remember him, as an intermediate school student, And he would tour around with all this equipment. And he would sit up on those old school stages, and we'd sit there for an hour. We'd pay our dollar note and into the box. It was a dollar note. And he would show us all the percussion instruments of the orchestra.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And he was the most amazingly flexible kind of guy, because he just jumped from instrument to instrument and play bits of music.
Yeah.
It was amazing to watch.
That's awesome.
So Gary Brain, look him up. And he was quite famous here. In New Zealand,
but you know he's with
the opposition,
the other orchestra.
What is the difference between a symphony orchestra and a philharmonic orchestra?
It's just the branding, the name. I mean, like we have the exact same instrumentalists. We play the exact same repertoire. Okay, we don't play the exact same.
Because that would be boring.
but like what we can achieve is exactly the same.
Right.
It's not like, because their name is that and our name is this, that there's anything that one or the other can or cannot do. So
and they didn't get to play with Michael Bolton.
That's
so.
Right. They did not get to play.
Some of them are quite thankful about that. You know? Some of them dodged a bullet.
I love that. I mean, you know, like one of the, I will say though, you know, because the schedules are quite different between the, you know, because they're the touring orchestra, so they'll. You know, they'll rehearse in Wellington for a week and then they'll spend like a week or two like touring around, whereas we primarily play in Auckland.
Yeah.
And a lot of what that means for us is that we play like three times as much music, because you know today there was a Mozart ballet at the Altea Center. Tomorrow we're rehearsing Beethoven 7 at the Town Hall. Thursday night we've got the Beethoven 7 concert. Friday morning we start rehearsals for Aida, the opera that we're doing, the opera in concert, the following week. While in between rehearsing, we have like a day of rehearsal for Aida, and then there's a what we call a dark day, because, you know, the singers...
A dark day.
I know, right? But yeah, like the singers can't sing 2 days in a row. You know, like they need that time. So on that dark day is actually when we're rehearsing for this Greffalo and Greffalo's Child thing. And then the next day we're performing Aida. And then the next morning we're doing the Greffalo Live. And so it's interesting because we actually do a large, large quantity of repertoire in the same time that maybe they would do like a program. It's just different, you know.
And that's really interesting, because you are a full-time musician in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Salaried, but you're not relying on gigs to pay the bills. Was that something you thought you'd end up doing when you ended up going down this path?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think when I, you know, pretty much when... You know, it was about when I was like going to uni. There was a hot minute where I was actually going to be a doctor. I really wanted to be a neonatologist, you know, like a newborn baby doctor, because I just really loved
a
babies.
Neonatologist.
Yeah. Oh,
sounds like a dinosaur doctor.
Yeah.
I'm a neonatologist.
Well, how do you know about newborn babies?
Well, I come from a family
young
of five
and good
kids.
Right?
Yeah, you know, well, it's just that I grew up with four brothers and sisters, so you know, I had some practice, you know.
Wow.
But I don't know. I don't currently know anything about them because I chose not to go down that route. So definitely, please, no one come to me after the concert and ask me about babies. I will give you the worst advice.
We've got a call coming through.
Oh, yes.
Looks like it's from Jacinda.
Oh.
To direct line to our show.
Yes.
Being the Arts and Cultural Minister, of
course.
Now
we're talking.
Yeah. She's probably looking for some advice, so we just won't answer it. Won't answer it. Yeah. Strange the journeys we take, isn't it?
Yeah. It's quite interesting. But yeah, I mean, once I decided to do music, it was... I wanted to play in a symphony orchestra full time.
Can I just play, because if people are wondering what a timpani sounds like, I'm
going to
play a little bit of probably one of the most famous pieces with timpani in it.
Yeah.
And the timpani is the big bassy drum thing you can hear in the background, isn't it? So we'll play this. It's only a minute and 40, so we'll keep the mics open if you want to comment if you recognize this piece of music at all. Here we go. I should probably turn the... I always
think that was what you expected. timpani is cool.
I mean, look.
What that was Michael Bolton.
Look, if they decide they want to add timpani to that track, I just want to go on record saying I'm down to play it. Yeah. I will make something up. Just let me in. Like,
let's try that again. Here we go. I've got it now.
Oh yeah.
I can see it now. Yep.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Very slow.
There it is. He's had a hard day, that guy.
We go to the gym to get ready for this piece, you know?
Is it fun playing that?
Oh God, it's so much fun.
Have you played this piece of music?
Yeah, what? Actually, I have a quite funny story about this. So, I'm not going to use any real names or I will say this story did not happen in Auckland.
Okay,
that is true. It happened back in the city. Anyway, so I was playing an orchestra once with a conductor that, you know, was kind of known for not being a huge fan of timpani and percussion. Anyway, so it was my first time playing this piece, and you know, I had to go for it, you know. And it was like the first rehearsal, and you know, we get to that, and I'm just like, yeah, I'm playing as loud as I can, and I get like three notes into it, like just like I played three notes, and he stops, and he just goes, Jesus Christ, son, this isn't Spaceballs.
It's a great movie.
Yeah.
Of its time.
Yeah.
It stands up.
Yeah, satire. It
really does.
Yeah. It was a spoof rather than satire. Yeah. Of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Who was
that? From the desert. Yeah.
Oh. So do conductors have favourites?
Oh, for sure.
Just like teachers do, I'm sure.
Oh, come on.
You have favourites.
No, they all have potential.
Actually, for what it's worth, though, so after he said that, I continued to play real soft in the rehearsals, and in the concert, I played it even louder than in the first rehearsal.
Oh, you're one of those actors that go, yeah, I'll listen to the director until opening night, and then I'll do what the hell I want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
How much control do you have as a curator over an exhibition?
It's a real collaborative thing, yeah. So it's a big team behind it. I guess it's a core team of sort of five people, so it was... Me, I was one of the curators, and my colleague Sean Higgins, who looks after the pictorial collection, so that's photographs and works on paper. So we were the two curators on the exhibition. Then we have what's called a content and interpretation developer. So they're...
Oh, sounds like a dance move.
Yeah. So they're there to kind of advocate for the audience, I guess. So we're okay. We're the people... I don't want to use the word intellectual because it's not about that, but I guess the curators are there to provide access to the collections and the kind of content and the research side of things, and then these other people are there to kind of, I guess, be an intermediary. And then we work with a writer as well. We have a wonderful writer at Auckland Museum who kind of filters all of the stuff that we give them in terms of research into 60 words max for, you know, they condense all of this really dense and knowledge down into this really kind of palatable thing. So apparently, I think it's something like the kind of average a visitor spends looking at a label is 6 seconds.
Yeah.
So we have to really...
And if it's children, it's two.
Yeah, exactly.
Picking up on that, I was down in Wellington. I went and saw the Suffragette and the Titiliti exhibition.
Yeah, I haven't been.
That was just
amazing. Yeah, it looks beautiful.
And the whole thing around the development of Titiliti was an arched wall. He says, banging the microphone, an arched wall with these little panels on it, which represented all the stuff over the journey to the treaty being signed, and then after what happened afterwards. And that was, when I think about it, these little panels with about maybe 40 words, but really nailed the important facts really quickly. It must be a high skill.
Yeah, it is, definitely. Yeah, she's amazing. Her name's Rebecca Lyle, and this is my first show that I've worked on at Auckland Museum, and my first big show ever. And it was a real, privilege to be able to work with all these really talented people.
So how do you become a curator then?
There's lots of different pathways, I suppose.
What was yours? At school, were you like, did you go to the school library and sort things out?
No, so they look better, not at all. I was an art history person. That was Yeah, so I thought I was going to go down that road. And ended up doing a Masters of Museum and Heritage Studies at Auckland, at Victoria University, sorry. And then had a bit of a meandering path. There's lots of contracts in the museum world. So I did a three-week contract at Te Papa. That was my first ever job. And
For three weeks. It's like being a musician, isn't it?
It was cataloguing a photographic collection. And then, yeah, had a kind of longer contract at Te Papa, working with their history collection, and then went up to Napier and worked at the museum and art gallery up there for 6 months, and then back to Wellington, then to Christchurch, worked at the Air Force Museum. And that's the first time I worked in archives, which is where I am now, at Auckland Museum, and fell in love with archives and the written word and the written record, really, I suppose.
So you have to be fairly flexible and able to travel. It's like a lot of arts jobs,
yeah,
isn't it, really?
Yeah, definitely.
And you've got those short-term contracts.
You know, with more and more graduates, obviously, and kind of expanding and fluctuating in job markets, as is everywhere. So, yeah, it's definitely not... It's competitive, and you do have to be willing or able to move, which, it kind of narrows the pool, I guess, because not everyone can do that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Have to be flexible.
Yeah, definitely.
God, and Auckland Museum, this is your biggest exhibition.
Maybe my first ever. It's a big one.
Yeah,
but it's been wonderful. Like, there's just a wealth of experience at that place.
Yeah.
And amazing colleagues and amazing collections. So we have wonderful things to work with.
What a great theme, though, to start
off. I know. I kind of feel like maybe it's all downhill for me.
Oh.
Well, not really, but it's like, you know, this is something that's really close to my heart anyway, which also meant it was a lot of angst on my behalf about if we were getting it right, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But, amazing privilege. I can't believe my luck, really. Really amazing.
So looking forward to seeing it. It opened on Friday. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, so we had a great opening.
Didn't get an invitation. I'm just not putting it out.
do you have to pay to go see?
No, it's free.
It's free.
Good.
Cool.
Free for every. So the museum is free for all Auckland ratepayers, but this exhibition in the special exhibition hall is free for everyone. So, do come
it's
along.
An important
and it's
one.
It's very participatory. So there's obviously content from the museum, lots and lots of stuff from our collections, but we also ask the visitor to make contributions as well. So that's sort of around voting for certain things or creating a protest placard.
Down with Trump.
Anything you want. We want people to kind of really leave their mark, as those women did 125
absolutely.
Years ago.
Absolutely, and since... Now, someone who left their mark was Beethoven. I'm just going to give you guys a break. You're doing really well. I've only got half an hour to go, and I'm going to play... So you mentioned about Beethoven's second movement having some timpani in it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to play a little bit of that. Not the whole thing, because that's 12 minutes, 21 seconds.
Yeah.
It's a bit long.
Yeah.
But I'll give you guys a chance to stretch your legs, and our don't go away, guys. Go and make a cup of tea. Bring it back. Sit by the radio. Sit by the old wireless. I find it really amusing that wireless used to be the thing about the radio, and now wireless is, we still listen on the wireless to the radio through the web. Isn't that just how things are in a circle?
Yeah.
In a circle. The wireless I used to listen to wasn't quite that advanced. But Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. Any comments on this as a classical musician?
I mean, you know, it's interesting. Beethoven is really how timpani is basically like drum set for the classical orchestra. You know, it's like as you'll hear listening to this, it's you know, a lot of it is like in unison with the trumpets, and it's just like the underlying beat to it. You know, so like listening to it with that in mind, it really frames it in a really interesting way. But yeah, this is one of those great examples of, you know, getting to play really loud and having to play really soft, you know, one right after another, and just keeping it moving. Yeah, it's a good time.
It's a good time. As a classical drummer, you heard it here first. Just having a good time with Beethoven's Ninth. We're rocking it out here at Kick Arts.
Rock and roll, man.
We're going to leave you with the Ninth Symphony. We'll be back after this musical interlude to carry on talking about... I'm going to ask Jenny about how she got involved with being a drama teacher, because that's a pathway. That's a pathway. Here we go. Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, Second Movement. If I can get this thing to work again.
I can just sing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're not going to listen to that one because that seems to be somewhat not.
That's taking one. The timpani as drum set a little too literally. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was our rock and roll version of Beethoven. That's just terrible. Doesn't tell you it's a rock and roll guitar. Thanks for that, Georgia.
Did I do that?
Yeah. As my co-host, you see, I'm blaming you.
I don't know anything about classical music.
Do you like classical music, Jenny?
Do I like it? Yes, I would listen to it, but I feel completely out of my comfort zone.
It's tough. You know,
like you said before, I feel like it's very exclusive and it's not. I don't feel part of the club.
Certainly, yeah. I mean, I know what you mean. You know, what's interesting is like for me studying in school, that was like the roadblock for me is, you know, like how can I understand this in such a way that it just feels natural? You know, because you know if you think about it, like the way we listen to pop music. We have an easy time listening to pop music because we expect what's coming next, and that makes us, you know, feel good. It's always in 4/4. You know, you're gonna have a verse, and then you're gonna go to a chorus, and you're gonna have a verse, and then you're gonna have a bridge, and you're gonna have a chorus, and maybe there's an outro or a guitar solo, and then we go out. And you know, the thing about classical music is, you know, for the people at that time, the forms that are being used, you know, that's what they were actually used to hearing. You know, like they, so, you know, when someone at that time was listening to a Beethoven symphony, it just felt right. You know, like it just felt natural the way it was going. And, you know, the thing is, I'd say, because this is, you know, this comes up a lot, like the accessibility of it. You know, I think something that can really help is, you know, would you go to a rock concert for a band that you didn't know? Probably not, because you'd just be bored the whole time because you wouldn't know the music. It's the exact same thing with classical music. I would say just, you know, for me, if I'm going to a classical musical concert, even, you know, at the stage that I'm at, if I always try to do some research beforehand, even if it's just like Wikipedia, you know, Google search Shostakovich 5, and then, you know, you find out like, oh, you know, the USSR was coming after him, and this was him coming back into their good graces after the censorship and, you know, with Stalin and all that. And, you know, even something like that can actually completely change the accessibility of what you're listening to.
Is there room for interpretation? Is there, like for example, I could go see Shakespeare and someone else could do it and interpret it completely differently.
Absolutely.
Could I listen to the same piece of classical music?
You heard that rock and roll Beethoven song.
Yeah, I mean, you know, honestly,
I think I found a real
was
one.
Was it actually?
Is it but Symphony Number 9 in D minor, Opus 125, :2? Is that the second movement?
That sounds right.
Okay, I've got it.
Yeah.
So complicated. I need a good curator for the music of the show. So we can talk afterwards now, because that might be, yes. Should we try and knock this out again? You guys can have a break again.
Sure, yeah.
And then we'll see if we get this right this time. Georgia, thanks for your help.
You know? Georgia's so welcome.
That's it.
That's you, is it? Is it actually you? Or?
No, it's not.
Okay.
I have no idea.
Could you knock it out on the table there?
Oh, sure. Oh, there.
Wow, that was pretty impressive. That was pretty good. And the microphones are now reverberating. We'll just let that settle down a little bit. Yeah.
So is it that really, really big drum?
Yes.
With the big sticks?
Yes.
And the that is so cool.
Yeah, are they sticks or mallets? Yeah, or sticks.
I mean, you can call it whatever you want.
My dad's actually a drummer. He's going to be so disappointed that I had never heard of that drum before. I must not ever have listened to him.
Like a professional drummer?
Well, no, he drums all day long. He's in bands in Dunedin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, jazz
if
drummer.
You're going to be in a band, you've got to be in a band in Dunedin. That's where New Zealand music originated from. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Wow.
That's awesome.
So he still plays in the band?
Yeah.
Jazz?
Jazz, yeah.
Big fan of jazz?
Me?
Yeah.
No, not really. I was traumatized as a kid.
Yeah.
No, I don't listen to jazz at all.
I love jazz.
I love blues, but not jazz. It's a bit wacky.
I adore jazz. I've got a dear friend who hates jazz to the point where he describes it as, it just sounds to me like there are several people warming up their instruments in the same room.
Yeah.
But actually that 60s, 70s, there's a fantastic documentary series by... I want to say Alan Hall. He's famous. He does famous documentary series. Anyway, he did one on jazz and blues, and it follows it right back from the slave days all the way through to the Blue Note stuff come up in the 90s, the jazz fusion stuff. Fantastic series. And I just fell in love with jazz again watching that. It was just the origins of the music and, and that Coltrane and, oh, my God.
I have to say that my favorite joking quote about jazz is, of course, if you guys have seen The Office, there's an episode later on where Dwight and Angela are together and I can't remember what the setup is, but he says something. It's like, oh, and how you feel about jazz? And she's really upset, and she's just like, I don't understand. Like, why can't they just play the right notes?
Yeah. Now, speaking of the right notes, you guys were talking in the break about it's interpretation.
Oh my God, I lost it now. I think it was mostly back on the accessibility conversation. You know, like something. Talking about is that, for a good example is this week we're doing Beethoven 7. And if you have no, for me, when I think of Beethoven 7, well, I've spent way more hours with Beethoven 7 than I really want to admit to, because it's it's whenever we have auditions, it's one of the things that's always on there. So I've had to do that. But when I think of Beethoven 7, I think of being living in LA and being at USC and going to the Hollywood Bowl and hearing the LA Phil do it. And the best part of the Hollywood Bowl is you can bring your own wine in. And I've got that emotional connection with the piece, and so for me it's like I love hearing it, and especially the slow movement of it. It's just like it gets me every time. But that's the thing. If you don't have any prior reference to it, I can see why if someone said, hey, do you want to go see Beethoven 7, it might not be something you would leap at. But it's just like anything else, just having some sort of frame of reference, emotional background. And I think this is kind of one of the great parts about still having so much live music and live orchestras is you can sit at home and listen to it, or it can be an event. You can go see the orchestra, and that gives it more weight, I think, than just throwing it on
music,
the iPhone.
Live music is so much better.
Yeah.
We have this conversation around the table here at Kikarts quite often. What will happen with technology? Will actors disappear? Will dancer musicians disappear? Sort of thing. Will checkout operators disappear? Oh, that's a separate discussion. So do you think that technology will affect theatre? Sorry. I just read something about there was a protest because those self-service checkouts are doing away with jobs.
Mm.
So
are they though? Because
no, I don't think
so
they
many
are.
People that have to come and help you.
Yeah, I know. Yes. I'm sorry. Please place it back in the wrong. You have put the wrong. Oh, my God. I didn't. You have put it back. Put it back now.
Yeah, yeah. At what point do you just walk out of the store?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, many times.
Well, if somebody spoke that to somebody spoke like that to me at the checkout, I'd go. You have put the wrong item in the bag. Okay, sorry. I'm sorry.
The worst thing to buy at chilies, like individual chilies, because it won't register them. They're so light.
Yeah.
And so the other day I was sort of like cutting it down. It was the worst. Yeah.
Does that mean they're free?
Well, I think maybe they should
must be.
Countdown.
They must be. Sorry.
That's all right. I just wanted to go back to the Beethoven 7. Not that I know what that is, but I'm really interested. So you know it so well.
Yeah.
Like you said, even the slow bit, or you know every kind of aspect of it.
Yeah.
So what if I put on Beethoven 7 and I put my spin on it? Is that going to be sacrilegious? Are you going to come along and go...
Absolutely not.
She just ruined it.
Absolutely not. No, I mean, that's you know, that's part of why this stuff still gets played, is that there's so much... Yeah, you know, there's so much music there. There's so much art there that it bears repeating, for what it's worth. Okay. So yeah, I mean, you know, because like we were talking about earlier about interpretation, this is why it's so cool to have you know, like different conductors come in town, because they all have different takes on how things should go. Like you know, for instance, last week we did Mendelssohn's Fourth Symphony, and it's, I think that's the third time I've done it since I've been here, which is like almost 2 years, and every single time it's been like radically different. And what I mean by that is, like, it's funny because you know, I have like my copies of my parts, and the reason I keep my copies is so I can just write all over them, and then next time I go to play the piece, I just pull that back out, and I don't have to do all that prep work. Yeah. But it's funny because, you know, like, we did it, and I'm like crossing things out from the last time we did it, and, you know, changing it, and yeah, I mean, the interpretation is, I think that's kind of, you know, the amazing part of it, is that it can be completely your own. You know, you have certain, there are certain composers where, like, I'm blanking on the exact piece right now, but there's a Benjamin Britten piece where he had written out all these program notes to accompany the piece, of like, this is the story that's going on with it. And then he actually didn't release those, and then supposedly he burned them. And so we'll never know. And you know, supposedly the reason for that was he just thought it would be better if we, by the way, this is the slow movement of Beethoven.
So I was saying before, movies that got me into classical music, Amadeus, this is in Barry Lyndon, isn't it? So Stanley Kubrick movie, Barry Lyndon, do you know that?
I haven't seen it.
Anyway, movies.
Yeah. I was just picking up on what you're saying, with we have often curators from art galleries come in and talk about the fact that an artist from overseas will send an installation piece over. You know, talk about interpretation. They'll send over with notes. But actually, the installation of the art piece can often be different depending on what gallery you go to, because it's interpreted by the curators.
Yeah, and I guess it often has to be, because something, they're often created in really site-specific ways, and then if it travels and goes somewhere different, rooms are different, walls are different, heights of walls are different, you know, it has to... So I guess that's just indicative of travelling something like an installation. Yeah, yeah.
So all art is open to interpretation, isn't it?
I would hope, but to be honest, I would have thought that classical music wasn't. Yeah. So I feel like I've been something, and it makes me actually want to...
Yeah. Have you listened to Nigel Kennedy's Four Seasons? Do you remember that? Because that was kind of rock. That was kind
that was
a rock and roll.
The people,
and then Vanessa Mae.
All right.
You know,
yeah. Okay. All right.
There was she was the violinist.
And beautiful. Stunning. And she again gave that rock. She had an electric violin and gave it that kind of rock.
Is
feel.
That happening still? I guess like I solo mio people like that are kind are of bringing making opera, it popular.
Yeah. Because opera's very exclusive, isn't it?
Yeah.
Time for opera's that Twin Set and Pearl thing here that you know.
And what I mean. The people who come to your concerts, is it the expected?
No.
Is it changing?
It's the whole gamut of uni students, kids, you know, I mean, certainly we have a very devoted older crowd that we love. But yeah, no, I mean, it's, It runs the whole gamut nowadays, which is it's cool. I mean, you know, because when I was in school, you know, I was going to every concert every week, and yeah, I would say it's certainly at our APO concert. You know, like, you know, right now I'm picturing in my head what it was like this past Thursday when we did. Oh my God, that was like 4 days ago. Oh, Brahms 4. Okay, so Brahms 4. Yeah, I mean, there were people my age. There were teenagers. It's the whole gamut now.
Marketing too, probably.
Certainly, well, and also doing things like the Gruffalo, you're building a future audience.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a great like family thing. That's the thing. I think, you know, when you say the like the pearls and stuff, I think though it's one of those things where if you just came, you'd see that it's not that, you know. It's actually, you know, because like, yeah, especially an orchestra like the APO. I think one of my favorite parts of playing in it is that you have a lot of, you know, looking at the musicians themselves. There's a lot of, you know, there's younger musicians. There's a lot of internationals. There's you have a lot of like diversity in like age and, you know, where people are from in the orchestra. And you know, it's also reflected in the audience. And yeah, I mean, I think, you know, again, like the concept, you know, what you're talking about, like I see what you mean. It's like, you know, it's like that, just that initial, you know, even I think I heard a study, it was even people sometimes are afraid to come to classical concerts because they're not sure when to clap. And they don't want to be like the one You don't want to be that one person that claps in the movement.
I clapped in one of the operas once because I was really impressed that they actually did some acting, because often they don't. And so I clapped. I applauded the aria because it was not only did she sing it, but she actually acted it.
Yeah.
And I one my thing about opera is that I just, you know, I'm a theatre background, so I expect a little bit of acting, just a little bit of acting.
Yeah.
And people looked at me like, Philistine, what are you doing here? You're doing here in your jeans and t-shirt.
Frankly, if it happens again and people look at you like that, just clap even louder.
Okay.
And then trust me, everyone else will catch on.
And they'll go, oh, someone's clapping, so it must be the right time.
Yeah, exactly. No, yeah, I mean, even stuff like that. But yeah, I mean,
I'm
honestly, my recommendation would be, you know, like go on again, because like at APO, we're doing so much rep that, you know, if you don't like what we're doing today, you can wait a couple of days and it'll be something
else. Well, I'm coming to the Gruffalo.
Oh, great. Okay,
well,
awesome.
Because I have kids and I just think, well, you know, I feel like a little bit of, I can't believe
culture?
That I sort of, yeah, I can't believe I didn't really know that about
certainly,
music.
Yeah.
And I really want to come.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, I'm in Rosarua and I saw it. It's only on for one day.
Mm.
One day. So the 21st of July.
21st
and
of July.
And there's two shows on that one day?
It's two shows, 11 a.m. and...
some other time. 2 o'clock? 2. 7?
I'm running out of pitch 11. Here. I can only go so high.
Okay.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Right. 11 and 2.
11 and 2. Okay. 11 and 2. So kids can... Yeah.
And we'll be able to see you standing in the back.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you will see me.
Cool. You can go, stay!
May, remember May?
Yes. Please do. Yeah.
That'll just shake things up a little bit, won't it?
I think so.
Yeah.
Did you come and see my play?
Yeah.
If Steve wanted to see your play, how would he do it?
Yeah, how can I come see your play?
Oh, gosh, that was a good one.
And that's how you pivot.
Steve, you're probably performing, but hypothetically, if you wanted to come see my play.
Yeah.
So it's called Fitu, which means seven in Māori. And it is on in the second week of the school holidays from the 18th to the 20th of July. Very family-friendly times, 10:30 a.m. and 1:30 p.m., and it's only 45 minutes long.
Gosh.
So you probably won't need a snack, Steve, but kids that come along will only need one little snack during that time.
I'll need a snack.
Okay. There is a bar as well, but
I'm doing Dry July. Don't even tell me there's a bar.
That sounds terrible.
It is terrible.
Why would you do that to yourself?
Yeah.
Raising money for a good cause, people. Raising money for fat people with cancer in their families.
So people are
support.
Giving you money?
Yep, I've raised $250 so far. My target's
$500. That's brilliant.
So if any of my friends are listening, you can still go to my page and click on and donate, please. Sorry, as you were saying, there's a bar.
There is a bar. It's not open.
tomorrow. 10:30
Well, school holidays can be tough.
Oh, yes.
And it is the second week.
Yeah.
So
the bar's open from 9.
Yeah.
Sorry, what's the venue?
Lopdale House Theatre in Titirangi. We talked about this before.
That's right.
It's refurbished in the sense of comfy. Yep. And it's very intimate, so the wee kids that are sitting in the front row will actually have their feet on the stage, which is super exciting. And they will be asked to come up at the end and join in our waiata, which they probably all know from school. It's a little matariki waiata that a lot of kids have been learning. So it's very inclusive.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And where do they get tickets from?
They get tickets from Eventfinder. What is awesome about that is that they can book those tickets and they don't have to pay for them. They're free, but you do need to book them to reserve them. So Eventfinder, Fetu Amatariki Story. And it's on that same page. Here you go, Steve. Take the flyer.
Sorry, I'm like looking over at her stuff, trying to figure out how to spell it. I'm sorry.
I also should plug the whole festival, though. I mean, we are a very small part of a major festival program that is all done by volunteers. I mean, so many people doing everything for the love of it during this festival, and so many free events. Just as a real celebration of this special time of year.
It is, Matariki. It's our own. We had Celine here from Auckland Council last week talking about all the free events, you know, the hundreds of events that are going on all across Auckland about Matariki, which is, I think it's great. And it's our new
really
year,
well,
and it's a time to make... Do you make New Year's resolutions, Nina?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. And I'm following through this year.
Well, are you going to make one for Matariki?
I haven't thought about it.
Because it's our new year, so you can...
Absolutely.
If it didn't work on the old Northern Hemisphere New Year, you can kick in a new one.
I'll just continue my current one, I think.
Yeah, are you going to share that with us?
I think taking stoppers.
It's going to the gym. It's really exciting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's happening.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
You're enjoying it?
No.
No. There's the problem straight there. I'll talk to you after that. So,
do what Richard does and do the Netflix treadmill.
Absolutely.
Well,
my God, it's such a good thing to do.
I do that at the gym. Mm-hmm. I watch things.
Oh, yeah. It's a good... Actually, going somewhere like that is a good space, isn't it? Good space to get away from curating.
Spaces. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. What do you do to relax?
I watch television. Okay. I read.
Yeah.
Think about work.
Think about work. I don't want to be doing that. Don't want to be doing that, because if you think about work all the time, you never get away from it.
No,
I didn't ask you. Your pathway to become a drama teacher, Jenny.
Yes.
See, I said that quite dramatically. Drama teacher. What steered you down that path? At school, did you go, I want to be a drama teacher? Were you one of those drama kids?
No. I went to a school... I was at school in the 90s, and drama wasn't even a subject. You were lucky if your English teacher was quite good at... or quite liked Shakespeare or drama, so maybe you got to do a little bit in English. My friends and I, we were just desperate to do anything, so we tended to start up things like talent shows at school, and that was kind of our drama fix, which is really sad, eh?
No.
Really.
That's cool.
We did a really bad Queen... bad.
Like the band Queen?
Yes.
Oh, not like the Elizabeth Queen.
Cover. Oh, no.
Yeah. The band. My husband and I. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So I really got into theatre at uni. I was one of those uni theatre kids that did experimental lunchtime theatre at Canterbury. And which was awesome. And free.
Yeah.
I have this thing about free theatre. And then I did go to drama school in Christchurch at NASDA, which is kind of, I think it's still around.
Yeah, NASDA is.
I think it's still around, yeah.
Really,
I was
popular.
I was in the early days.
There's a lot of graduates have come through our show, actually, from NASDA.
Oh, right,
Yeah,
it was awesome. But I don't know, I've done a stint at the Court Theatre and I've done a little bit of acting, but I just... It comes back to, unfortunately, trying to find something that pays the bills that also incorporates what I'm good at and what I love. And teaching is that for me. Because it's the content. I think there's a bit of acting in teaching, maybe, for some teachers.
Mm. Have you seen, what's that Australian series, Summer Filled High or Summer Something High?
With Summer Heights
High
and the drama teacher.
The drama teacher
who's fantastic. brilliant.
Do you think? I think that drama should be
compulsory.
Yeah. Well, I think it gives you, as you said, like it's a
core subject.
Acting and teaching, and we could all do with that. You know, like
confidence.
And, well, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I think communication is that what it is? Maybe it's more.
Being able to
improvise. A clear communicator.
I think is a really good skill.
Yep.
And terrifying. But if you have those kind of, I don't know, tools. You can kind of get by in many different situations.
I think I think you learn to back yourself by doing drama at school. You learn that you can get up in front of a group of people and that you're not going to freeze.
Yeah.
You can do it.
You're not going to do much money, but you're not going to freeze.
Hey, look, if you apply for funding grants...
Yes. So how do you do that? Auckland
you're
Council.
Not going to make money, but you might be able paid. To make some theatre.
Creative communities... Creative New Zealand, Foundation North, all those pub charities.
Auckland Council website is full of all sorts of local board grants, I think they're called.
And if it's within their grant area, right, and you're applying for arts or sports or something.
So the one that I'm doing is West Auckland because the theatre is in Te Rerangi. So it's a West Auckland funding. And, I mean, do you know what? So when I was accepted for the grant, I got an email from the creative communities thanking me, saying thank you so much for providing this this opportunity for our community. And I thought, well, I'm kind of more like thanking you for giving me the money to do it, but it was really cool. It was kind of like thank you for providing this opportunity, and they want people to just come forward and share the arts with everybody, especially young people. That's a big part of their criteria, engaging young people.
The thing is, if you don't engage young people, just so you know, in the background, I'm playing lots of different classical music.
I've noticed.
I'm quite enjoying it, actually. It's quite nice in the background. Making me sleepy. I've completely lost my train of thought.
If you don't engage young people
in the arts, you don't make it normalised, we won't have audiences in the future, whether it be museums where people go. So parents need to take their kids to museums.
Yeah.
That's why I suppose the museums have gone down that path of being that quiet place that they used to be.
Yeah.
We didn't touch anything. Now they're completely interactive.
Absolutely. And it's something we really need to keep kind of going down that path. And one with this show as well, we want young people to be able to see themselves in this story. You know, often I think, I mean, the old exhibits are wonderful, and people, there's so much wonderment in seeing, you know, ancient things and all that kind of stuff. But I think people being able to see themselves reflected in history is really, really important. And so that's something we really wanted to put in the show as well. So it's not just 125 years ago, and it's not just those amazing women in the 70s, the second wave feminist movement, and it's not just the kind of big, you know, names that we know and have heard of. We showcase young people in this show as well. And one of the, actually all of the things we collected from the Women's March in 2017 were from young people. The youngest was a 14-year-old, and her poster is on display in the show. I saw her at the opening, and she was taking a selfie in front of it, and I just thought, that's so great.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, and the photographer who we collected from from that march as well, she's sort of, I think, in her early 20s. And her work in the show is now sitting beside people like Gil Hanley, who's I don't know if you've heard of Gil Hanley before. She's one of New Zealand's most important documentary photographers. So she photographed basically... I don't know how, maybe there were three of her, I don't know, but she photographed everything.
She could start a band.
Everything. She photographed every women's march, every women's anything like that, all the Springbok stuff. She was first, I think, the only photographer allowed in the Rainbow Warrior, so she's like an amazing, you know. And now this young person is in the same place as her, and I think that's really important to be able to see yourself.
Because the struggle continues, it's just in different parameters.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's part of, I guess, the whole thing around a re-flourishing of interest in the New Zealand wars is for young people to be able to see that history is
See what
continuous.
The students did in Otara Hunga College.
Well, yeah, how amazing is that?
That was incredible. That was
we have that, or I think we're in the... Can I say this? We've collected that box that the petition went to Parliament in, because
that's
such a significant...
Well, it's changing the thought pattern, because people are now going, we need to commemorate, we need to recognise the importance of those battles.
And how is it affecting our world today? Of course it is. We live with history every day.
I always post on Anzac Day, I always post a photo of Māori warriors from the land wars and say, lest we forget, because we often forget our own battles that occurred on our own lands here going back. And on that sombre note... How do people get to the expo? How long is it on for?
I think it's the end of October, so okay. October 31st.
And people say, oh, I've got till the end of October, I'll go later. But actually, no. It goes really
it goes
quickly,
really
and suddenly
quick.
It's you're getting an yeah. email saying it closes this weekend.
Yeah.
And it's a really important exhibition, I think, for people
yeah,
to go and understand
so.
Our history
yeah,
and
I
our future.
So. Yeah, celebrate
well.
And also reflect.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's interactive, you said.
Yeah, there's lots of participatory elements to the show. And again, that's about making sure people feel a part of that history and
ooh.
That they yeah
nice
yeah are forming history as well,
and they can then go next door and let go a butterfly
yeah they yep. can go to the beautiful butterfly exhibition.
Absolutely.
And also have a coffee at our great new cafe,
which
oh.
is
at
the,
oh. the cafe no there's one at the front of the museum now.
I'm not
that is
they don't let you in the front anymore, do they?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, yeah.
I had to go around the back for the butterfly.
At the fancy front, you know, with the, what's it called? The
columns.
The Grand Hall, is that what it's
yeah.
called? Yeah. A really good cafe, so.
Well, I'm going to have to go
no,
just
my,
for the coffee.
No, my everybody, come to the museum.
Come to the museum. Actually, I highly recommend it. And the school holidays, it's going
to
rain from about Saturday, so you've got
yeah,
a whole day just wandering around, just say to the kids, go run, be free. Gruffalo is another great holiday experience,
yeah.
and that's on the 21st, 11 o'clock and 2 o'clock. At the
Altair
Centre. Wow.
Yeah.
Get tickets. Just go to the APO website and I'll have all the instructions on how to get tickets.
Yeah.
And then Fetu, or Seven, which is on as part of Matariki Festival's free. And they can see that at Te Tairangi Lopto House.
Mm-hmm.
We have to go to Event Finder to get tickets for that. That's not a barrier. That's a way to know that you're going to get in there, because no point in driving all the way to Te Tairangi and then going, didn't get in good, so we'll go and do something. Let's go climb in the Waitakere's. No, there's a rahui on. You
don't
can't.
Go.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. I'll end on that note. Thank you, Georgie. You've been so vocal tonight again, especially in the first 5 minutes. You kind of went,
I like listening.
You should stay at home and tune in. No, it's lovely having you here. It always is. So in the next 2 weeks, I'm not going to be here.
Yeah.
You're going to be here with Paula.
Me and Paula.
Yeah, because
I
love
Paula.
I'm in Rotorua school.
What's happening in Rotorua?
Lots of stuff.
Oh.
Nothing specific. I'm going down. I'm there for a conference at the end of the holidays, but I'm taking the kids down because I thought if I'm going to drive down there, I'll take the kids. We'll spend 10 days going to Taupo, Rotorua, the lakes, you know,
the
buried
geysers.
Village,
very
the geysers,
cool.
The Whakawerawera is a great place to go.
Oh, yeah.
A movie maybe if it rains. I looked at the temperature, it's going to be minus one
ooh,
in the
yes.
morning. There's a low. I was in Taupo on Wednesday. I woke up to minus three.
Wow.
Was going to go for a walk, took my walking gear. Didn't go out the door.
No.
I went out and went, should have dressed warmer. I'm used to Auckland mornings.
Yeah.
So, but hey, everyone have a really, really safe holiday, please. Drive carefully on those roads. Don't be in a hurry. You've got 2 weeks. Just take it easy. Stop off. Have a coffee. Sausage roll. Those fantastic tea rooms around the country, they're an institution of themselves. You cannot not stop. Go to Tito. Great shops there as well, secondhand. And great coffee there as well. Thanks, guys. Good luck with your projects.
Thank
and
you.
I hope to have you
very
back
much.
On the show again when you're doing
yeah,
something
please.
Else.
Yeah.
That was fantastic having you here. Great
thank
chats.
You.
And, Georgia, good luck next week with the show. I'm sure you and Paula will rock it all out really well.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be fantastic.
It's our first show together.
Wow. That'll be great. I'll be tuning in from Rotorua because there's not much else to do. on a Sunday night. I've been Richard Green. I've been your host for the last 90 minutes. And we will catch you again next week, 8 o'clock. 104.6 FM or live stream planetaudio.org.nz. And also don't forget to like us on Facebook, and tomorrow we'll post the show on Facebook as a podcast. You can download it. If you love the show, you can give it to your friends. If you didn't, just send it to your enemies. Share the love. I've been Richard Green. Go out there this week and kick some arts.